The EMS Garage is a production of EMSRadio.com. You can find us on Facebook, just search EMS Garage. You can find us on Twitter at EMS Garage. Email us, emsgarage@gmail.com, or call us, 303-720-6001. This episode is sponsored by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. If you would like to get a free audiobook and a 14-day free trial, sign up by going to www.audiblepodcast.com/EMS. That's www.audiblepodcast.com/EMS.
The EMS Garage.
Okay, I got DC on the phone. They want to know if you can handle that call as well. Just confirming you are checking the patient.
Yeah, I'm at 22 is on scene.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EMS Garage. It's your weekly podcast about EMS and all things in between, and I'm your host, Chris Montero. You can find me, Geeky Medic, on all those good websites, and thanks for joining me tonight. Tonight, I have an all-star lineup, as always. Some of the finest names in EMS talking to you every week into your iPod or website or Zoom or whatever you're listening to us on, but we really appreciate you for listening and hanging in there with us through almost 80 episodes, which is really cool.
Wow.
I know, it's amazing. This is episode 79, so I'm really excited. And that wow you just heard was Mr. Steve Wirth, and he's joining us tonight, and it is the Steve Wirth that you're thinking about, the Paige Wolfberg and Wirth. Thank you for joining us tonight, sir.
Great to be here, Chris and everybody.
Well, we're excited to have you, and we've had you on a few podcasts before, and I just like having you on, so we're going to talk about First Amendment issues and social media and everything in between, so that'll be good. And also joining me tonight is the rogue medic, Mr. Tim Noonan.
Hello.
Hey, you know what? It was nice meeting you at EMS today, finally, in person.
Briefly.
Very briefly. Man, it was like, that was really fast. We need to have some time again when we can hang out.
Sounds good.
All right. And Mr. Justin Shore, the happy medic. How are you, sir?
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Are you working?
I am working.
Oh, wow. So you or Steve may get a call. So we'll make sure that we try and get you guys on early.
Hey.
I think it's really cool that you and Steve both are still doing work. And here I am not doing work anymore, which is sad. I'm driving a desk. Mr. Kyle David Bates, all the way from, you're not in Tonawanda tonight. You're on the other side of the world, kind of. You're in Alaska.
Yeah, sir. Alaska, doing the Interior Region EMS Council's 6th Annual Symposium up here.
Oh, that's cool. I've never been to Alaska.
Oh, it's a first, so we're having a good time so far. We got in last night and went to the International Ice Sculpting Competition. Everyone's gone now, but all the ice sculptures are still left there, so we checked those out today.
Oh, cool.
And he's got a great video on Ustream of that, by the way.
Excellent.
Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, playing with the whole Ustream thing. Once everyone gets here for the conference, I think I'm going to hop on Greg's little thing there and see how many people are using social media in EMS, and also maybe talking about some seatbelt use and distractions in the units as well. So I'll try to get those posted up on Ustream.
Oh, well, cool. I can't wait to see those. That'll be good. We're actually doing a class on Ustream coming up on when we're starting our community paramedic class next week, and we're gonna do every lecture on Ustream. So you can actually watch it and see what it's all about and kind of get a brief preview. We're only doing 4 classes or 5 actual didactic classes. The rest of it will be online. But whatever you... So the point is that if we have, you know, we have weather events or something like that where people can't make it to the class, they could actually just log on live to Ustream and watch it, or We're going to tape it and put it on CenterLearn later so people can watch it at their leisure if they, because we're going to have people that are in class that are on call and they miss part of the class or whatever. So we're really hoping that they can make it. So also joining me tonight is Mr. Greg Fries. Hello, sir.
Hey, Chris. I'm calling you from exotic central Wisconsin.
Is it Pulver or Pulliver?
Plover, or as we in the biz like to say, pee lover.
Oh my goodness, dude, that's funny.
That's just wrong.
Oh man,
it
wow.
is wrong.
No, but it's plover like the bird.
Well, you know what? I was actually, your ears should have been burning today because I was talking about you.
Oh, well, that explains a lot. I was trying to rake the lawn and sparks were falling off my lobes and igniting the grass clippings at my feet.
It was all good. Somebody said, oh, that's the guy on CenterLearn. I'm like, yeah. They're like, he's on your podcast? I said, yes. They're like, he's famous. And I just looked at him like, I'm not famous? Apparently, it's just you, Greg.
Well, good. I have a long strive for worldwide acclaim, and so it's slowly coming to me.
Right on. Well, there you go. You're getting it. Well, thanks for joining me, Mr. Fries. And finally, last but certainly not least, is Mr. David Koenig. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm actually calling you from quarantine. I'm in light of possibly violating HIPAA, I will be considered patient zero of the winter, spring, cold phenomenon in New York City, as I've spent the last 4 days hopped up on Dayquil. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good.
That's
Dayquil.
Okay. Self-disclosure is not a HIPAA violation.
Good.
I love having the attorneys on. It's so nice.
it's so awesome just to get that, you know, that confirmation that I'm going to be okay with this.
That's right.
There you go.
That's great. Well, the reason Mr. Wirth is joining us tonight, and I'm very happy that he is and everybody, we're going to talk about social media. And what are your First Amendment protections while you're blogging about your job or after the job or while you're on the job? And so what really sparked this for me was the South Carolina case. And Steve, you said you had some opinions about that. So can you share, if you're not familiar with it, a South Carolina firefighter got fired for posting a cartoon on Facebook about him or an interaction with a firefighter and an ER doc. So, Steve, what's your take on that? And do you think that there was really some just cause to fire the guy?
Yeah, that's an interesting case, Chris, and it just goes to show you that today your employer is monitoring everything. Anything you put on social media, you can just presume that your boss or others are watching it. And the video that he put on the onto his Facebook page was created himself through a website called extranormal.com. And I looked around, there's about probably 10 or 12 of these EMS related funny cartoons poking fun at what we do and basically bringing attention to some of the problems in our industry. In this case, this firefighter medic created a video by typing in words and then characters that he had created, sort of like you creating your own Wii characters. You may have, you see how that's done. And the focus was basically on getting a call at 3 a.m. to the emergency department for a patient with a runny nose. And, an interchange between the ER doc, who's portrayed, of course, as basically an incompetent person, and the medic, who's all riled up because, you called us out for this at 3 a.m.? And, that whole 9 yards. So there are aspects of what he did that certainly relate to what we call matters of public concern, something that taxpayers and citizens might be interested in knowing about their public agency, fire department, or EMS agency that they pay tax dollars to, and that would be abuse of 911, which is a major problem, as we all know, around the country. The problem with his video is it got a little too personal in a few places, and used the name of a physician at that particular hospital where they transported patients, and there was enough negativity in the thing that, frankly, the employer in this particular case said, sorry, you don't need to work here. This affects our reputation. It was derogatory. His termination letter said that he created this video, the derogatory video depicting a member of the department interacting with a physician, which is implied to be that medical center in that community. Created an embarrassment, interferes with the cooperative relationship with the hospital and so forth. They probably in this case had enough to justify that termination based on my reading of the court cases and so forth. You walk a fine line when you start criticizing your employer, when you start criticizing entities or other agencies you work with. And your employer, whether it's a private entity or a public agency, does have a right to maintain its reputation, to maintain order, to avoid embarrassment in the community and those kinds of things. And that's generally the gist of his termination. Now, when you look at the situation, you could say certainly this was an extreme case. It seems like, terminating someone for that, if that was the only issue, if the guy hadn't had any notice about the, misuse of social networking, if he had a good record prior to this, one would question whether firing or terminating the person would be too extreme, certainly. But it does seem like there's a lot of interests here that the employer would have to protect.
Well, do you think that it brought more? It really brought more to it that it got publicized and then it got reported on the local.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Whereas if they would
have
just went, oh gee, don't do that again, and slapped him on the wrist, it would have been nothing.
Yeah, and one can debate what action you should take. Jim Page always said, discipline with due process. Do you jump from step? Is your first step termination? Rarely should that be the case. I'm talking general principles here. I mean, in this age of social media, with everybody jumping on Facebook and putting their status and posting pictures and all that, we got to get control of this. As if you're an employer, you've got to set the policies. You got to tell people what you expect. You can't expect people to follow the rules when you have no rules. And it is a little unfair to, terminate someone for something when they weren't aware of what the standards were and what the employer expected. So I don't know all the particulars in this case. I would certainly agree that termination would seem extreme. And like you suggested, had they just said, hey, take that off Facebook. In watching the news report where this paramedic was interviewed by the news media, he basically said, look, he sort of said, if they had just said something to me, I'd have taken it off. Most people would do that. Most people that post things that are obnoxious or out of character or improper, or tasteless, whatever, a lot of times they don't realize they're doing it and then they need somebody to say, hey, that was a stupid thing you put up there. You better take it off. And most people would say, they'll look at it again and say, yeah, you're right, I'll take it off. How many of us here tonight have sent an email to somebody in a fit of anger or emotion and then gone, after you hit the send button, go, oh my God, what did I just do? And want to suck it back from the computer, it happens, it's something we all have to be careful of these days.
So given that, and given the understanding of that, then what is our protection when we're not on duty from the First Amendment? I mean, do we enjoy that as a, I'll ask the Skip Kirkwood question, but as an EMT or paramedic, do we enjoy First Amendment protection when we're not on duty?
Well, you got to determine, one, are you a public employee or are you an employee of a private entity?
Okay, doggone it. You stole Skip's question right there.
Oh,
he's
really?
Like, oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's the question he wanted me to ask you.
Yeah, well, there it is. Because bottom line is, what a lot of people don't realize is the United States Constitution does not protect us from our employers. We have no free speech rights in the private workplace, okay? It protects us from our employer if our, let me re- rephrase that, our employer to some extent, if the employer is a public agency, i.e. the government, okay, because the Constitution was designed to protect citizens from abuses of the government. It wasn't designed, nor does it, protect you from abuses of a private employer that's a jerk, unfortunately. There are other laws that we can rely on, perhaps, to help protect us, anti-discrimination laws and so forth. But if you are a private employee of a private for-profit ambulance service or a private nonprofit ambulance service, you really have no First Amendment rights in the workplace at all. And the employer in that case can terminate you for any reason, no reason, good reason, whatever reason, unless the reason is a unlawfully discriminatory reason, like based on your age, race, sex, national origin, color, ethnic background, religion, disability, you know, the list of all those protected categories. So here in this South Carolina case, he was a public employee. It was a county EMS agency. So county, you know, government employees do enjoy some First Amendment protection. And that is the right to speak out on matters of public concern that could affect public safety, that the taxpayers would have an interest in, basically. But even when you have that right to speak out on matters of public concern, you got to be careful because the government employer still has the right to maintain order and civility in the workplace and has certainly interests in maintaining an efficient workplace. And the courts generally balance that interest against the individual employee's interest in free expression. And a lot of it has to do with the context in which it is said. Let me give you an example. Can I give you another case that just came out as an example?
Oh, please. Absolutely.
Okay. Here's this just was a court case just a few weeks ago up in New England. A fire chief was suspended for 15 days after he made comments at a couple of press conferences that were held immediately after a bad fire call where two children had perished in the fire, unfortunately. And in the press conference, the chief made comments about staffing issues. He said, quote, unquote, quote, "I've been asking to replace the firefighters here in the town over the last 5 years, and it seems to have fallen on deaf ears." He said that at a press conference with other public officials present. And he made several comments related to, you know, inadequate manpower, you know, had there been more manpower, you know, and that I've been complaining about for a long time, we could have done better, that kind of thing. And in that case, the court ruled against him when he appealed his suspension, the First Circuit Court of Appeals up in New England, basically saying that even though he was a public employee and even though he was speaking out at what may well have been a matter of public concern, the point here was he wasn't speaking as a private citizen. He was speaking in his official capacity as a fire chief. And the government has the right to control that 100%. You know, you can imagine the chaos in government if people speaking on behalf of the government were expressing their own personal opinions all the time. So perhaps in this case, if he'd have spoken out, you know, maybe posted a statement on his Facebook page to that effect, he might have been protected. But in this case, he was doing it while on duty, while, you know, in his public capacity. So that's another line that's drawn in terms of free speech rights as a government employee. There's a distinction there between, you know, are you functioning as a public employee or a private citizen? So, really interesting stuff happening. I give you some other examples. I mean, these are real live EMS examples. I did a seminar a few weeks ago, and I was told this incident. EMT in the back of an ambulance transporting a nursing home patient to a hospital, a routine transport, okay? So what's the EMT do in this particular case? He does his mobile upload on Facebook, you know, mobile status upload, whatever you call it, and he posts this statement, "Transporting another Gomer from the nursing home to the hospital."
Oh.
And yeah, who is right? And then it happened that the timing, of course, the nice thing about Facebook is the time is injected there. Okay. So, you know, everybody knew what time he did that. And it just coincided with the time that he was in the back of the ambulance with the patient. Now, talk about lack of professionalism. Now, let's go to that issue, you know, for a minute. Take away free speech and all that for a minute. One, you can't be doing that on company time for sure, you know. Secondly, you know, what should we be doing with the patient? Shouldn't he be, like, monitoring the patient, talking to this nice elderly lady, making her day go a bit better, perhaps hold her hand, you know? What's going on when we as healthcare providers are more concerned with giving a status update on Facebook and being consumed by our, you know, personal digital assistant device or whatever we want to call it? You know, I think some, you know, we're losing sight of some of the basic fundamentals here.
Well, that brings up a couple of good questions, and I want to talk about them. But first, we have to say thank you to our sponsor, Audible.com. If you have not heard an Audible book, or you don't have time to read, because I don't have time to read, and you want to have some quality time, it's like reading, but for your ears. It's like ear candy. And so tonight what I did is I went and said, I wonder if there's books about law. And I went, I really want something that's more of a novel. And if you have not read or heard Above the Law by Tim Green, very, very good book. It's really about it is a novel, and I'm not going to ruin it for you, but go to audible.com, look up Above the Law, and listen to it. It's like I said, it's like candy for your ears. And you know what? If you go there right now, I'm going to give you the free book. We're going to do a 14-day free trial for you. And all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/EMS, and we're going to give you that book. So if you want to listen to it, Audible has it. Over 75,000 titles, virtually any genre. And I mean any genre. I found last week, I actually went on there and I went, oh, there's a book about paramedics, and you can actually listen to the paramedic textbook that was written by Dr. Bledsoe. So let me tell you, they've got everything, and I was really impressed. So you'll find what you're looking for. Get a free audiobook, 14-day free trial, signing up, audiblepodcast.com/EMS. And thank you, Audible, for sponsoring us. And I know you've already had two or three new customers because of this podcast. So don't forget to listen to our podcast and then go there and sign up, because we still want you to listen to us. But, you know, we're only 2 hours a week, and we want to get you as much audio entertainment as we can get you. And there are a lot of times you're in front of that ambulance, you're like, oh, man, I really need some time, and I'm tired of listening to the radio all the time. Well, listen to an Audible book and expand your mind. So, good stuff. Well, thank you, Audible. So, Steve, I do have a question. There's a lot of people that are Twittering or they're sending things to their Facebook while they're en route to the call. Now, what's your feeling on that?
Well, first of all, you know, any employer, regardless of whether you're public or private, has the absolute right to control what you do while on duty. Certainly, even though it may not be the company's equipment that you're using, if you're using your personal device and doing things you shouldn't be doing while on duty, you know, that's a safety issue. That's a pay attention to the job issue. It's a distraction. Absolutely, you know, something can be done to stop that. You know, obviously you should have a policy in place. But people, here's another example of how people lose sight of common sense. I talked to another EMS manager recently who said, yeah, I was riding along with one of my crew members, and the EMT who was driving the ambulance is there, and she's driving, and I'm sitting next to her in the officer's seat, and we stop at a stoplight, and she has her device in her lap. I was going to say something else. In her lap, okay, she pulls the device out and starts texting. Uh-huh. And the EMS chief, her boss, looks over at her and says, what are you doing? And the nice EMT driving the ambulance looks over to the right to the officer, their chief, and says, well, I'm texting, of course. And the chief says, but you're driving. And the EMT looks back and says, no, I'm not. We're stopped at a stoplight. Does anyone see a problem with that?
You know, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, but seriously, I mean, that's the kind of thing. This is an addicting thing. This is another aspect of all this. This stuff is addictive. You know, I'm on Facebook, and I look at all these people send me requests for farm animals and, you know, for Farmville, and someone throwing a snowball at you, you can throw one back, and blah, blah, blah. You can. It's a time suck, literally, and people get so caught up in this stuff, it's worse. I think it's worse than the video game phenomenon, frankly, because now we've taken it out of the safety of the living room or family room, and now we put it in motor vehicles, you know. Mm. And people are driving and texting and driving and tweeting and twittering or whatever it's called. And
I may have to edit that.
Twittering, I say.
Yeah, there you go. That's good.
Famous last words.
Yeah, there you go. You know, and we got to set some rules. We got to set some boundaries for people, unfortunately. You know, you think it's all common sense, but, you know, in these days of the electronic world, common sense isn't so common, unfortunately.
Well, very true. So I'm going to open it up to everybody else. What do you guys think? You know, what are your thoughts on it? Ask Steve a lot of questions, you know. Make him think. Make him put
on
his lawyer.
Yeah, I'm interested in what our experts have to say about all this, too, because you guys are out there in the front lines, too. You know, what do you think of all this stuff?
Go ahead, David.
Just on the same thought as far as the policy goes and items like that, you know, one of the popular things is a cell phone use policy that mm-hmm. most agencies have. They have a policy that says your cell phone cannot be used or can be used during these times and so on and so forth. The thing that I've been talking with a lot of people about is that policies really, at this point, should be more about behavior as opposed to individual devices. And when you look at cell phones, they've evolved, they've added cameras. Video is now done by the iPod Nano. Mm-hmm. So if you have a cell phone policy that says no cell phones while you're working, but you have an iPod Nano, well, then you still have the opening for a responder who could turn around and potentially take video of some place where he shouldn't be taking video. So shouldn't the policies be based more on actions and behaviors as opposed to the technology? Because, I mean, let's face it, technology is always evolving. We're always going to see something new. You know, I'm mm-hmm. anticipating the Apple iPad anxiously, and who knows what's, you know, 9 months down the road.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. Not just for the reason you said, although that's a very valid reason. The technology is always changing, so your policy will be outdated in 6 months when the next device comes out. The main reason to focus on behavior is because that's the core of how we function. You know, our core values drive our behavior. And unless we tell people in the organization, these are the values and these are the things we expect you know, of everyone, because this is how we conduct ourselves in our community and maintain the best patient care and the highest degree of respect for people's privacy and so forth. I don't agree that my personal opinion is I would not prohibit cell phone use on duty. I would say here are the parameters in which you can use your cell phone, like you said. You know, and if you can't figure out, based on us giving you these parameters in a policy and communicating that to you, then, you know, shame on us for bringing you into the organization in the first place, because you're like that person at that intersection at the stoplight. You don't know the difference between being distracted and not being distracted. You know, if you're sitting there thinking you're not using your device when you're sitting there at a stop sign, that it's okay at a stoplight, you know. Absolutely. And I think, you know, employers run the risk of overreacting to these technologies, and they run the risk of, you know, being too rigid about it. You know, in this here we are in 2010 or 2010, depending on your preference. And a cell phone today is an appendage. These devices are part of our being. If you tell people you can't wear it on your belt, I mean, you're talking about single parents, you know, people in EMS, and at least in this part of the country, they're working two or three jobs just to put a meal on the table. And, you know, it's an unrealistic expectation to just obliterate the, you know, use of the technology. Okay, I talked too long. I'm sorry.
No, not at all.
Got me going on that because I think you hit on a really good point.
I think Steve is right that the habit-forming nature of the smartphones with the, like the BlackBerry with the blinking red light that you have a new message, you know, because it's so habit-forming, the things that we do all the time, we're going to continue to do unless there is like a really sort of like thoughtful, I can't do this thing that I do all the time because I'm at work now. Because of that habits, it goes with us, and that's why people are using their cell phone as they drive or sending text messages as stop sign or just updating their Facebook status. You know, if that EMT in the back of the ambulance had written something like, I'm having the thrill of transporting a World War II veteran right now and hearing his incredible stories of the Great War. What an honor! Would he be in trouble, or would you know? Was it because he called the patient a gomer? So some of it is just like the actual content that you share.
Yeah, I think in your example, though, I think both instances are improper use because it's a safety issue. You shouldn't be doing that in the back of an ambulance. Now, if he did that later after his shift or when it was downtime and his employer was okay to, you know, use Facebook, you know, while on duty when your work is done and your reports are done, et cetera, you know, that may not be so bad. Again, you got to be careful, though, when you raise another point here, and that is you got to be careful about patient information. Here's an example of another post. Just came off of a heavy-duty shift. You know, that major crash up on Interstate 81, you know, that guy in the back of that car, he was obliterated, and he was just a piece of road pizza. Okay? Now, that, you know, most people are going to identify what accident that is, if it was a really bad accident. He named the highway it was on. You know, can you imagine, you know, friends and family members seeing that post if they happen to see it? And it just portrays the organization as kind of a callous, non-caring, they refer to people as road pizza. You know, unfortunately, you know, we're all in the business, if you will. The people outside our business don't understand our weird, quirky sense of humor, you know. And I tell EMTs and medics this all the time when I teach about testifying in court, you know. Be careful what you write, you know. Don't make up acronyms like, wow, found that patient FUBAR in the back seat, you know, FUBAR. You may think it's funny and we get caught up in that you know, unique experiences that we have as EMS providers, but the average public would look at that and say, oh my God, you know, they did what? You know, they said that. So that's another thing to think about.
Steve, do you think that we talked a little bit earlier about policies and such and how it's hard to write a policy because the technology changes so fast. Instead of writing a policy to be exclusive, should we not make it more inclusive as to what you can do while driving? You can operate the radio. You know, you can operate the radio in certain aspects. You can operate the siren. You know, and leave it inclusive as opposed to what you can't do.
Yeah, I think it's wise to do it that way. Be inclusive. It's a positive way of stating a policy. The other aspect I think is important is to communicate the general values we adhere to in the organization. Like, for example, patient privacy is our sacred responsibility to respect at all times. Paying attention to our job 100% of the time is essential for safety for ourselves, our coworkers, and our patients. When you make value statements like that, then it's sort of, isn't it like the next step is, well, then I shouldn't be texting while I'm driving, stopping at a stoplight, because I might not see the light turn green. It's a safety issue. I'm distracted. You know, I think setting a lot of value statements about what you stand for and the values that you expect people to have when they come into the organization is another important aspect of policy development.
Steve, we talked about, you know, with social media and iPhones and droids and everything that's out there. You know, the video message and Ustream. We talked about Ustream earlier. Mm-hmm. It's out there. Where do we fall in terms of publishing these online, these pictures and these photographs, like that correct with the guy at the road pizza?
Yeah, I think you have to be very careful with publishing any visual images online. And I think you do need to have some fairly strict rules on that for HIPAA's sake, because HIPAA says if you're a covered entity under HIPAA, protected health information comes from all sources. It's not just written or typed. It can be verbal. It could be visual. So your photo or your little video clip may well be protected health information that the organization has an obligation to protect. So, yeah, I think you got to have pretty strict rules on what people can post and what photos they're allowed to take. We generally recommend that the company, the EMS agency itself, retain the ownership and maintenance of any digital equipment that you're going to use for visual or for digital imaging. And then that way you control it. It's your device as an employer. And then when people use it, you keep it. It's yours. You know, the problem is with these personal devices, people snap a picture real quick with a BlackBerry, like on my curve, and half the time, you know, nobody knows you're taking the picture. That's the scary part about it, is you never know when your picture is going to be taken, right?
Now, Steve, if you're out in public view, let's say you're out in the middle of a road, and you're not directly involved in patient care, you know, how I can look at, you know, like, we can say how it doesn't look good and looks bad, but legally, is that a HIPAA violation?
You know, that is a great question. I'm glad you asked that one, because there's common misconception about that. First of all, if you're an average citizen on the street taking a picture, sure. If you're the news media, sure. If you're a police department, sure. Yeah. Guess what? As an ambulance service, most ambulance services, fire department ambulance services, are covered entities under HIPAA. So even though the news media or any other citizen could take a picture of a patient out in the open view on the street, as you suggest, as a covered entity, it doesn't matter. You have to protect that. You're not allowed to just willy-nilly distribute that image. It is protected health information because you took it as an agent of that covered entity under HIPAA. A lot of folks get confused there. They think, you know, well, hey, I'm not busy, or, you know, I'm not doing anything. I can take these pictures because it's out in public view. But you forget your professional responsibility is as an EMS provider working for an agency that is covered under HIPAA. The only reason you're at that scene is because the privilege of responding as a result of your agency's response. You know, if you're a citizen, then you're okay. I mean, if you're acting as a citizen and coming upon a scene, it might be a little different story. But, you know, I think the way you described it was if you weren't busy or not tied up taking a picture.
Steve, do you think... go ahead, Kyle. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Follow up.
Now, how do the magazines get away with this? All the various EMS and trade magazines? Because they're even worse. They're right in the back of an ambulance. And some of those cases, interesting if they got them out of release assigned or not.
I will tell you now, most magazines get written authorization from the people in the photographs. I'll guarantee you that any of the major magazines do that. And that's okay then. Once you get a written authorization, that's fine, you know. But unless you have that written authorization, if you're a covered entity under HIPAA, you got to be very, very careful about the images that you distribute to other people. Now, the other way to get around it is if, and I shouldn't say get around it, but the other way to avoid a violation of the law, okay, would be to de-identify that protected health information. In other words, there's no faces, there's no images that show where the accident was, et cetera. So there can be steps taken to de-identify it so that, you know, you can't tell who it is.
And, you know, I know, you know, working in the hospital, and working in the healthcare industry as a medical photographer, we had to de-identify folks. We also had to make sure there was no tattoos, birthmarks.
Oh yeah,
deformities.
Unique stuff. Yeah, and I bet as a photographer in the hospital, you had a whole clipboard full of release forms everywhere you went.
Oh, we do. I mean, yeah, I have an issue seeing some of these pictures that are in these magazines. And, you know, I guess I also look at it, I mean, you know, maybe it's illegal, but then is it ethical and moral to be doing some of these photographs?
Yeah, and the other aspect of it is if you're a news agency, that's different because news agencies aren't covered under HIPAA. Anything out in the open's fair game, you know. If a patient says, "Hey, come on in here. You can bring your video camera in here." Sure, that's fine. It's, you know, but you know, as an ambulance service, you know, generally, if we're covered under HIPAA. Now, there are some exceptions. There are a few entities that don't bill or don't do any electronic transfer of patient information. There still are a few of them out there, but there aren't too many that would not be covered under HIPAA.
So, Steve, can we basically say that any time that we've initiated contact with a patient and that patient then falls under our purview, that we shouldn't be broadcasting an image of that patient without their knowledge, whether that's via email, whether that's through on Facebook, whatever it is, we shouldn't be in any form talking about that patient without their consent?
Yes, as a general rule, that's the best rule to follow. Absolutely. And, you know, your organization should have some policies on that in terms of what steps are taken to use those kinds of images. I mean, this thing can really run amok. I mean, my goodness, I had a paramedic come up to me after a conference and say, "What do I do?" You know, he says to me, "Every time we get on an accident scene, I got to tell my EMT partner, hey, come on over here. We got patients to take care of." I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Because my EMT partner is always taking pictures of the scene as we get out of the vehicle instead of pulling out the jump kit, because he's getting $30 a photo everyone he emails to the local news station if they use it." Now, talk about a problem there. I mean, so, you know, yeah, absolutely. Any image that you take should certainly not be distributed without going through the company and without having unless you have the patient's permission, you shouldn't be distributing it, generally speaking.
All right, good. So I know Justin has to have a question, or David, or even Tim. Come on.
Well, Justin here, not necessarily a question so much. I'm sorry, I'm at work here. I had to hide in the stairwell. My wireless signal was getting a little iffy. But a perfect example of I kind of put it under the duty to act when I think about HIPAA. If you watch Chronicles of EMS and you see the interactions that Mark and I have with the citizens, the clients, and the patients that I had, Mark and I were only able to blog about the patients who gave consent to be on the show. Mm-hmm. We were not able to blog about the patients who didn't give consent. So there's patients you see in the show that I can't blog about, even though you've seen everything I'm going to blog about, because they did not sign a release for that information to be released along with who they are and where they are. And because you know where I was and when I was there because of my updates, I can't talk about it. But the people who did sign the release for their likeness and their medical history to be used, I no longer fell under that because they gave their consent for their information to for me to use it.
For that and purpose, exactly.
Exactly.
Yep.
So there's so many great stories I want to tell everybody and I can't. And it drives me absolutely nuts that a law that was enacted so that billers wouldn't sell information is now starting in this new digital age to not hamper, but make complicated paramedics sharing life-saving information. And I'm wondering...
Yeah, but I would disagree with you a little bit there. We'll stir up a little controversy. I think HIPAA is a good thing for all of us from the standpoint of, why should you be allowed to display images without my permission? I don't want my bloody leg on some blog somewhere. And, you know, we got to keep in mind, too, you know, we look at this stuff, you know, as sort of like, wow, this is cool stuff. It's to us, it's a high. It's like we get all adrenaline work up, you know, over this stuff. But our particular high is someone else's low, and the low is that patient. And And I think it's very critical. In like what you just said, I think your show is great because it portrays real life stuff. But the average person watching it probably thinks, well, hey, he goes out there and takes whatever pictures he wants because that's the way it's portrayed in the show, because that's the nature of the show. They don't know what you just said, Justin, which is an interesting point, that you have to follow these rules and you got to get permission. And the viewers just assume that it's open game, you know, for them being on the image.
Exactly. And it's difficult to separate the rules with images and kind of my own rules with text. I don't use any images that I capture when I'm working, just for the reason that it's a minefield that I don't want to go through. There's
right.
GPS tags and timestamps and all these things. And I try to make my posts generic enough to be able to share information that I want to share without people being able to pinpoint what happened. But what I would love to show in future episodes is the 30 to 45 minutes that we would talk with people about why we want them to sign the consent form to use their likeness and their history on the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and really going through that process. A lot of people might see the show and read the blogs and say, oh, these guys can do whatever they want, when in actuality, we're tied to a tree.
Mm-hmm.
All legal respects.
It sounds like you follow all the right procedures. You use good common sense in what you're doing, and everything you've said, I think, is exactly the way you should blog about things. You know, and there's benefits to sharing those experiences with others. And I will say, back toning it down a little more now, HIPAA certainly does create a lot of obstacles. And I think in there are a lot of areas where HIPAA has restricted our ability to share information in a professional, educational environment. You know, it's made some hurdles for us to overcome. But when you look at the scheme of things, if you think about it, and we all, I'm sure, would agree with this, if we put ourselves in the shoes of the patient in that situation, we'd probably want those same protections, too, in many respects.
Absolutely. And just real quick to tie it back into what you said at the beginning, there's always bad apples. Common sense isn't mm-hmm. so common. And it's unfortunate that people are using this technology in a bad way. But the drinks after the, volunteer, they shouldn't get in big trouble. It's just this time maybe they're texting it before they. These folks are always going to get in trouble, and I'd like to almost say that we're able to get to them sooner and kind of try to smooth out the water before it gets too bad. But the South Carolina case, just to jump back into that, if they had handled it in-house and said, hey, you know what, if you like making movies, how about you make a training video?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would know what happened.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you on that one. And again, I think a lot of it comes down to just letting people know what the expectations are. And I looked at the video, and funny, in the session I did at EMS today in Baltimore, most of the people in the room didn't see it as, they thought it was amusing, but they didn't see it as that bad, really. You know, they thought it was, most people in the room didn't think the guy should have gotten fired, you know.
Do you think that there's more in his folder than we're made aware of?
There may well be. And like I said, I'm very careful in just talking about that case. I'm just commenting on what I've seen and read in the news media and on the videos and things that have been public access, you know, because it's a public agency. So some of that records and some of that stuff was open to the public. So I don't know. But I would imagine there might be more to it. I just don't know, though. And that's the thing behind the scenes. We don't know all the facts about the situation.
Tim, did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, have we always had to respect the patient's privacy, and this was just a way of changing the rules a little bit? Not necessarily a lot, but if you were disclosing personal information, wasn't that a legal problem before? Just people weren't that familiar with how to go about it?
Yeah, Tim, that's exactly right. You know, first of all, for years there's been state laws involving, that protect us from invasion of privacy. Pennsylvania has a cause of action called intrusion upon seclusion, being that seclusion is a right we have. So, yeah, there's been state law, there's been common law principles for many years that have protected privacy and just our own professional, you know, training. But, you know, part of the problem, Tim, I think, is that our training programs lack focus on these attitudinal or value type things that need to be incorporated into the program. And our training programs are so technically oriented, teaching skills, you know. Heck, you know, I'd rather have someone with good values and no skills than someone with, poor values and the best skills in the world. You know, it's easy to train skills, and I think sometimes we've lost track of these basic principles you're talking about, this basic fundamental right to privacy that's existed for many, many years. We've gotten away from emphasizing that as a cornerstone of our profession.
Well, I will disagree with you about the skills. I think that our most important skills are our assessment and our judgment, and those do not appear to be things that are that easy to educate people in.
Categorizing that too far.
The other thing was you keep using words like sacred, and I think you're going to find that upsets people rather than, you know, getting them to think about it in the way you want them to. When you start talking about things as sacred, people have other things that they consider to be sacred, and that will, possibly rub them the wrong way.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever word you choose, the point is really that it is a trust, and we have an obligation to respect that trust. And, whatever you can use to make the point, I think your point is well taken.
Understanding perhaps. The audience, maybe.
Yeah, sure, sure. I think we need to do whatever we can to use our influence as leaders in the industry to really tell people how important this stuff really is in the overall scheme of what we do and the skills that we provide to our patients.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I use my cell phone for, Dispatch actually sends us updates on our cell phones, but we've had problems with one of our heart monitors printing out strips, and if there's an unusual rhythm on there, I'll take a picture of it with my camera. Now, I don't use it on my own, but they haven't given me any camera to use for the same purpose, to make up for when the equipment is malfunctioning. Now, why it keeps malfunctioning, whole different problem, but that's one way to use the equipment in a way that is not, I'm never going to publish it, even though it's not really identifiable. I don't have an iPod an iPhone, so I don't have all that embedded information in there. But what Dave was saying is it's the behavior rather than the equipment. Any piece of equipment can be misused.
Right. Yeah, exactly. What you're talking about there doesn't sound like, if it's not individually identifiable, it may not be a HIPAA problem. But if you have someone who's like collecting his own set of EKG strips and
we're picking up after a major technical difficulty, and we'll just go on. So let me just sum up a little bit of this podcast. Basically, you should always do what's right for the patient, no matter what, and that includes protecting their privacy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, use common sense, some rights to regulate that off-duty conduct when it could affect the employer's reputation, their ability to, you know, get along with other agencies and general efficiency of the operation, and So you just got to be careful. Public employers certainly have to be a little more careful, because public employees do have some rights to free speech under the Constitution, to speak out on matters of public concern, but they have to be careful. If, as a public employee, cannot do that while they're functioning in their official capacity while on duty, like in the fire chief example I gave you a little earlier, they have to be careful they don't go too far and, like, criticize their boss, because personnel matters aren't protected under the First Amendment. Those are not considered matters of public concern. We didn't really get into that too much this evening. So, you know, common sense is really the other watch phrase to think about when dealing with the explosion of social media and electronic gadgetry that we all have today.
Well, and I think that may be the best tip we've had all night, is just use common sense. And if it seems wrong at the time, you probably shouldn't do it. And if you're going, boy, I don't know if I should be doing that, you probably shouldn't do it. Just listen to that inner voice in the back of your head. So, Natalie, we're catching you up because I know that you're running. You came in like the last 4 minutes because you really wanted on the podcast, right?
That's right.
It's awesome. So we were just talking about, you know, tweeting while you're on duty, and what are your protections in the First Amendment. So do you have any questions about social media and your First Amendment rights for the awesome Mr. Steve Worth?
Not really. Well, I guess I just tackled this. It's funny that I, you know, accidentally ended up on this Skype call because I had to tackle this with my boss, because I was tweeting at work, and I do have a podcast and a website, and he was, you know, concerned about HIPAA and all these things, but I'm anonymous for the most part. So he was just wondering how to tackle that, but we have come to agreement that, you know, my Facebook is private, all that. You can't find Natalie Quibido as Ms. Paramedic and where I work if you Google me. So
get it in writing.
Right. That's we're working on a policy right now, a social media policy for the company.
Great.
That's smart. Excellent. That's really good. All right. Well, since you're the last one on, I'm gonna give you the distinction of telling us where we can find you, Ms. Natalie.
You can find me everywhere. I'm at Miss Paramedic on Twitter, MissParamedic.com. Also, I have a little show called The Gen Med Show, GenMedShow.com, and we're about to start some really cool things with that coming up next week. So you can find me anywhere. I'm all over.
Right on. Well, thank you. And Mr. Steve Worth, where can people email you, or how can they find you?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's Sworth, Swirth, at pwwemslaw.com. Sworth@pwwemslaw.com.
And I'm not going to reveal your Skype name, but it's really awesome, so I just want you to know.
I guess my Skype name is, what is it, EMS lawyer?
Yeah, well, I should cut that out, because you don't want everybody in there under the sun adding you. You'll have 15,000 requests on Skype. You'll be like, who are all these people?
I'll
edit that out.
I don't mind that, because I don't get on Skype that often, actually.
Okay, gotcha. Very cool. Well, thank you for your insight tonight. It was very well received, and I really appreciate it. I'm sorry?
It's always fun to be on your show, Chris.
Well, thanks. Well, anytime. You know that. You can come anytime. Right. We love having you. Well, I'm going to do the Mr. David Koenig. He is, you can find him. Oh, gosh, you guys have to help me. What's his website? I'm blanking for some reason. Does anybody? Search David Koenig. You'll find him. I can't remember his blog.
His blog. DavidKoenig.com.
I think you're right.
/blog/... Well, if you just put http://davidkoenig.com/... I think that is his main page, and he does a bunch of other stuff besides his blog. He does a lot of social media stuff.
Ah, good point.
So it allows you to get to his blog. He has a tab on there somewhere for the blog.
That's weird. I can't remember his blog name. It's so funny. But because I read it all the time. And I also read The Rogue Medic, Mr. Tim Noonan.
Yay.
Where can people find you?
roguemedic.blogspot.com. And occasionally, I haven't been contributing enough to paramedicine101.blogspot.com.
Now, does David do that with you or no?
I don't think he's on Paramedicine 101.
But, okay. All right. Well, that's okay.
Maybe. It's a multi-author blog. It's run by Adam Thompson and a whole bunch of people on there. Kelly Grayson, I think. Let's see, who else? Justin, you write on there?
Yes, I was just recently lucky enough to get invited to be a contributor to Paramedicine 101. Very happy about that.
Happy to have you.
Very cool. And Mr. Justin Shore, the Happy Medic, where can people find you, sir?
Today you can find me at work, which is one of the reasons I wasn't able to talk about HIPAA the way I would love to talk about HIPAA.
Wait, real quick. Are you on Medic 13 still?
No, Medic 13 was disbanded 2 years ago. It is now Medic 99. No, I'm here at the quarters of Engine and Truck 16 in the Marina District. But you can find me online at thehappymedic.com or happymedic.com and on Twitter at thehappymedic.
Very cool. Well, thank you, Mr. Justin Shore. You can also find him at chroniclesofems.com. I recently got another fan, and she has nothing to do with EMS. Which is very cool, and I'm hoping that she'll. Well, I hope she'll start a blog. I'm trying to get her that way. And finally, last but certainly, first I'm going to talk about Mr. Greg Freeze. Mr. Greg Freeze, find him at gfreeze on Twitter. You can find him at emseducast.com, everydayemstips.com, piosocialmedia.com. You can find him everywhere. Just search Greg Freeze. You'll find him on Google. And finally, last but certainly not least, because I want to thank him so much for our logo and our new awesome, great logos for every web, for every property we're doing, Mr. Kyle David Bates. So, sir, where can we find you?
You can find me at, right now in the hotel room in Fairbanks, Alaska, up here doing a conference. And we're doing a whole workshop on taking our own photographs for cases as opposed to shooting them in real life, making up your own. Greg Freeze is doing the same thing in Juneau. But you can find me at kyledavid.com you can find me at Twitter at ImageMedic and throughout the various areas. I'm working on logos. I'm working with one right now with Natalie as well.
Very cool. And dude, you do awesome work. So if you want a logo done for your EMS agency, you're thinking about starting a podcast, a blog, something crazy that you want done, call Kyle, because man, that guy is an artiste. I don't know if I can even say that, but it's really good. So thank you, Kyle, so much. And thanks for joining us. Have a great time in Alaska. Are you up there for some vacation too, or are you just working?
Actually, I'm taking the first 3 or 4 days on vacation, and then the conference kicks off Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Well, enjoy it and take your wife out to dinner.
We're about to head out for crab. She's smiling here. She's drooling. We're going to go out for all-you-can-eat crab legs.
Perfect. Hi, Kyle David Bates' wife. I'm sure you're the woman behind the man. So get her to say hi.
Hi.
Yeah, there we go. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining me. I'm Geeky Medic on all the websites. You can find us EMS Garage on Twitter, and you can find us emsgarage.com. Thank you for joining us, and we really appreciate you guys listening to us. Also, remember, we're now partners with emsone.com. Go there within the next week or two, and you'll find all of our podcasts on their website, and you'll find more EMS1 content coming up live on our website as well. So, I'm Geeky Medic. Thanks for joining us, and join us next week when we talk more about EMS issues that concern you.